Cincinnati is trying to turn itself around after the rioting that rocked the city in April. The violence was sparked by the fatal shooting of a young black man by a white police officer. Tensions remain high. A local commission of experts, including police and clergy, set off on a tour of several cities to try to understand how they were able to bring about relative peace between their police and minority communities. Earlier this week, the commission members came to Boston. NPR's Philip Martin explains why.
12 years ago, Boston was a lot like Cincinnati. There was a growing sense among Boston's black residents that the police were their enemy. Many here recall when a white man accused a black man of murdering his wife. Charles Stewart leaped to his death from a tall bridge after his lie began to unravel, but not before police had rounded up dozens of black and Hispanic suspects. Then, in 1992, gang members entered a black church during a funeral and killed a mourner. Black ministers in particular had had enough. They saw a community under attack from both gangs and the cops and figured they had to do something. The Reverend Eugene Rivers is one of the founders of the faith-based 10-Point Coalition and is credited with helping to create a model of community police cooperation in Boston. He says the idea is simple.
We're going to organize within the community to do two things. A, function as ombudsman for the young people, and B, engage in strategic partnerships. So we will check the police, and in some sense police the police's conduct, and then by the same token, work with the police.
In Cincinnati, there are no strong relations between African-American churches and the police. Commission member Mike Allen is Cincinnati's district attorney.
The police have to meet the community halfway, though, and treat citizens respectful and with dignity. That sounds like what's happening here in Boston, and Reverend Rivers' ideas, I think, can be transformed to Cincinnati.
And it's not only clergy working with the Boston police. There also are doctors, politicians, lawyers, day laborers, and housewives. Reverend Rivers says the key is adult outreach to young people before they get into serious trouble. And the other important factor, he says, is teaching youth how to relate to police.
Addressing the kids, because you have at least two things. Number one.
Sitting around a wooden conference table at the Ella Baker House in Dorchester, 10 black men talk about the advice they give to police and troubled youth. All of them grasp Bibles in their hands. 8 of these counselors have served time in prison. Andre Norman says he started working with the police instead of against the police 6 years ago.
We sit down across the table from the police and we have conversations. And you get to know him as a person. And he gets to know me as a person. I'm not a con number or a docket number. He's not a badge. He's not a gun.
Fever, that's his name and the only name he offered, also takes up the challenge.
We knew what it took to go to jail. We know what it takes to stay out of jail. So what we're trying to tell them is like, they don't have to be your best friend or anything else, but you have to have some kind of mutual respect. They have to do their job. You have to live in the community unless you're going to move out of it. So that's what you're trying to get the kids to understand. Not all cops are bad cops.
And then it's time to hit the streets. Leaning against a splintered railing of a house, Counselor Mark Gibson stops to talk with 16-year-old Alfredo, who is Hispanic. Alfredo recently had a run-in with police.
I got chased because they thought I stole a car. They just beat me up because I made them run. I got them tired.
Did they charge you with resisting arrest and all that stuff?
I got like 9 charges on the case.
But it ended up worse for you because you resisted. Like if you hadn't resisted, do you think maybe you would have less charges or you think it would be the same outcome?
It's the same.
Sean, who is white, also has had scrapes with the law.
Me, personally, I don't like cops at all.
He's talking with counselor Jim Delphine.
They came to my house, like, can you put your hands behind your back? No problem. You know what I mean? Because I know I messed up. I didn't go to court that day. But, yo, they took me in the station, beat me.
We have rights to fight them, too. You know, the more people that fight, the more we can put pressure on them. Now we got to make decisions on how we're going to handle these things. We can go out killing every cop, which sounds and might even feel good. But we're going to have to deal with some consequences because of that. Or we could fight the legal route. We change laws and we change history.
Things are changing. After the community policing model was set up in 1992, complaints and lawsuits against the Boston police dropped by more than 50%, and gang-related murders in Boston declined 80%. Law enforcement officials and community leaders continue to meet every week at the Ella Baker House to talk about rumors of police abuse that might lead to tensions. One participant is Officer Neva Grice of the Boston Youth Violence Strike Force.
There's bad police officers like this bad postman. You're never going to hear about me beating up a kid or smacking a kid around. But if a kid mouths off, if he's involved or affiliated with a gang, I'm going to deal with him hard. But if he needs a summer job or he needs a camp, I'm going to refer him up.
In addition to trying to build relationships with kids, Boston has recruited hundreds of minority officers to the force. But Nadine Miller, deputy chief of the Massachusetts Transportation Police, says that hiring minority cops doesn't mean you solve problems like racial profiling.
Black young people will say that the black officers were harder on them than the white officers, depending on where that group is gathering. If it's on a street corner or in an area where there's known criminal activity, then the officer, any officer, is going to act in a particular manner.
That's why community policing must go beyond racial affinity, says Angela Blackwell, the president of Policy Link and the co-author of a new report on community policing titled A Force for Change.
Diversity alone does not transform the community. You need officers who have a connection and a respect for community.
And officers who reside in the community, says Blackwell. Unlike Cincinnati, whose police force largely lives outside city limits, Boston requires all of its police officers to live in the city. Officer Neva Grice was born in the Roxbury-Dorchester neighborhood that she patrols.
We eat, sleep, and work here, so there's not too many corners that we don't know. One of my partners, he grew up on a particular street in Roxbury, and we were chasing a kid, and the kid ran in the same little cut that he used to run in. So the kid's hiding behind this little wooden hideaway thing, and my partner, Davey, runs behind him. He's like, "Ha, I got you." And the kid's like, "How did you know where I was?" They said, "Man, I used to run the same place when the cops used to chase me. It's the same old neighborhood, and we're right here, and we're here to stay."
Still, policing in Boston has not been without its problems. Just this spring, some community leaders accused the transportation police of harassing young black men. And in May, undercover Boston cops killed a Salvadoran man who may not have recognized them as police. The Cincinnati Commission this week was able to learn how Boston avoided escalation into violence related to these incidents. The commission will next visit Kansas City and Seattle to find out how their police departments and communities are getting along. Philip Martin, NPR News, Boston.